This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening, and welcome to the Monday Late Late Show with your host, Toby Doncaster. Tonight, I discuss implementing EdTech in the classroom, the pitfalls and benefits, with someone new to the EdTech scene. What secrets will they unveil? Let us see.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Hello and good evening, everybody. Tonight, I'm joined by Eileen Wallace from Falkirk in the UK. Unfortunately, we seem to have a technical issue at the moment. I'm just trying to sort it out. We'll see what we've done. I've sent her an invitation. She should be joining me shortly, one should hope. Let's just see. There you go. And I've sent her an invite. Still trying to connect with Eileen. Come on in, Eileen. Come on, Eileen. Let's see what we can do. Not happening at the moment. Well, we're looking at your how we implement EdTech in the classroom, what starts people off, and you know, how to unfold the arms of the folded arm brigade, those teachers who don't exactly want to be engaged with EdTech. And, you know, I was hoping for some advice and suggestions from Eileen, but as I said, we've got a technical issue at the moment. Not a problem, Eileen, don't worry about it. I'm trying to get you to join in, but at the moment we seem to be having a technical problem. I do indeed.
Hey!
Eileen.
Hey! Isn't that a brilliant start? Hello, I'm about to talk to you about EdTech and I can't get my tech working. That's genius. Absolute genius.
But I suppose, you know, that's really what, you know, that's real life. It's as real to life as it gets, you know. We've all prepared. We know what we're doing. We, you know, and then, whoops, no, it's all going wrong.
Yeah, 100%.
But we've got you in here. So, you know, I'm glad you've managed to join in. So I really wanted to talk to you because you're new to the EdTech scene, really. You started in 2023. When exactly did you start?
So I went along to a session on the 26th of March, I know it exactly, and it was my local Apple Regional Training Centre.
Uh-huh, sure.
And I'd been having real issues with a couple of classes, and my faculty head and I had tried loads of different things from inter-class competitions to bribery to you name it. it just wasn't working. And this session had come up on making use of iPads in classroom. And I was a complete technophobe. All our students in Falkirk had been given iPads. And I was like, why have we given them complete waste of money? We could have better used it. And I would have ranted for hours to anybody who'd listened to me. But I was at that point of something has got to change and my mindset is what's going to have to change. So I went along to this session and it was absolutely brave pants time on. The other ladies there knew what they were talking about and I was like, oh God, what am I doing here? And at the very end of it, this platform was mentioned. That I thought, all right, that sounds a bit interesting. Went away, had a look at it at home and quite genuinely, my jaw hit the floor and I was like, this is what I need in the classroom. Because I was going, oh, this is cool. This is so so great. And I thought, yeah. I was like 49 years of age, bouncing up and down, going, I'm sitting there playing on my iPad on it at night. I thought, if I'm working like that, the kids are going to enjoy it. And honestly, now, just over a year on, those two classes are about to go off on exam leave. Mm. And I'm gutted that I'm about to lose them.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. So these two classes that have been on this journey with me from no kids, we don't use iPads in my classroom. Okay, you can. We'll have a quiz at the end. You can use them for that. And now it's as soon as they come in the door, all my kids are getting their iPads out, and they know they're going to be using them from the start of the lesson all the way through the end.
Wow. So I actually have a question. Do you have a phone policy in the class?
technically, yes. Technically, yes. But for quite a... Well, this is one of the bugbears that when I started using EdTech, I was like, no, they're just going to sit with their phones and they're going to go, no, I don't need it. And at first I was really, this is going to cause chaos and I'm going to have nothing but kids messaging. But the classes that I get all the time, I would say the phone usage in the classroom now is actually a lot less because they don't need, no, they know they're going to be on their iPads the whole time. And they also know that I'm going to be wandering around the classroom because a lot of the platforms now let you have stuff on your own teacher device so I can check who's on what and who shouldn't be. School does let us, if they're caught on their phones and they're not meant to be on them, they're confiscated. I send them down to the office. That happens a couple of times and they very quickly realise it's just not worth it.
Sure. So, you know, there's a policy there in place to sort of discipline the learners so that they can, you know, focus on getting the work done. So how long did it take for, you know, iPad usage to become the norm?
We'll have started that sort of just before Easter break last term. I think by the time I got to about the end of May, so maybe about 6 weeks in, my classes that I saw regularly, I was seeing a difference in phones getting snuck out. We have our first and second year classes on a rota, so we're getting 10 weeks at a time. Mm-hmm. And we've just started them now. So at the moment, I'm playing whack-a-mole with phone away. But I know it'll just take a couple of weeks perseverance and they'll soon work out. It's easier to do these things on the iPad than trying to, oh no, I haven't got it today, I'll just use my phone. Because a lot of the platforms, you can see them going, oh, I can't do that on my phone. Oh, because their pals are all doing something extra, like designing an avatar or playing a side game that they can't do on their phone. So the phones go away. And guess what? Their iPad is miraculously charged and it's suddenly out of their bag. It's all right. It's charged now, miss. Oh, is it? The classes that I have regularly, once they get into the habit of it, it doesn't take long for the phones just stay in the bag. And if there is a day when the kids have come in, they will just say to me, look, miss, I'm really sorry, I've left my iPad at my dad's, or it didn't change. And they will ask, do you mind if I use my phone? They will come up to you and say, look, I need to use my phone today. Is that all right? Yep, not a problem. But they know the rules that if I see them on anything else, the phone's off. And because they know how much we do on the iPads, they know if they don't have it, they're going to be missing out on a lot.
So I was just thinking, you know, really, is there more planning or less planning using iPads? Because, you know, it sounds like they're doing activity after activity after activity. Surely that means more work for you, doesn't it?
I'm not a big planner. I'll be honest. I was talking to one of the founders of an American platform, and he had asked me, you know, had I used the assistants to do lesson planning? And before I could stop myself, I'd laughed and gone, I've been teaching 20 years. I haven't lesson planned like that for a long time. What I have found really useful is a lot of the new platforms, you can upload your existing PowerPoints or Google Slides two and it will update them.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not starting from scratch. You've got your own materials that you know work. My subject, I'm the Scottish subject of modern studies. I don't think it quite has an equal in the English system. It's kind of like a bit of politics and a bit of sociology. But because of the way it works, I'm pretty much updating my stuff every year. Because there's a new prime minister, but that gets updated every 6 months. So, you know, there's a new somebody all the time. So I'm quite used to updating my stuff. But what I find, a lot of the new platforms are reaching out to teachers and going, what do you need us to do? And everybody goes, I just want to take my own materials and put it in there so I know what I'm working with, and then I can add the bells and whistles. So from the planning point of view, for me, I've got my materials there, and then I can just juice them up a bit, and you chuck a whiteboard task in, or a poll, or an open question, or some AI feedback, instead of having a separate exit, right, we're going to play a quiz. So although it may sound like they're jumping around, because you can app smash a lot of it, which is one of the weirdest sounding words, but there you go, we're in education, we like to make up new words. You can fit things in, so you can build it into your existing. Now, like I've said to you, I am still at the very beginning of this, and there are teachers out there who've been doing this for years, and they've got their Google Slides, and they slide this into it, and they add it, and you go, my God, how do you do that? That's amazing. So, you know, I think getting to grips with what platform you want to start with, and feeling confident with that, and because I know a lot of people talk about FOMO, you know, there's all these new platforms coming out at the time, but if you try and learn all of them at once, you start drowning. And so I find that if I do one and I work on that, and then once I feel confident, somebody else will mention something, or a couple of people have gone, have you tried? And you go, I better have a look at that. Mm-hmm. And then you go, oh, okay, so that could fit in there doing... I could add that into that part of the lesson, or, oh, you know what, I could change that completely. So if anything, I never thought I would say this, lesson planning has almost become fun. Genuinely, because you're not sitting thinking, right, I need pages 34 to 36, and then we're going to do this, and then they're going, I'm sitting on my iPad at home, watching the telly, having a cup of tea and a bicky, going, there's that lesson, right, I need to update that slide, 10 seconds, you've updated a slide, oh, I'll get them to do a quiz on such and such, you do one of the platforms to do an AI quiz, you put the link in, 3 minutes later, you've completely updated your lesson, and your tea hasn't even gone cold.
You know, you really, it's almost like there's so many benefits to EdTech. The learners are engaged in what they're supposed to be doing. You know, you've made lesson planning sound like a pleasure rather than a chore. I'm interested as well in any other teachers out there who might be listening in, whether you are a member of the Folded Arm Brigade. You know, you don't want to be involved in using EdTech. Call in and give us your opinion, or send in a text. But also, you know, if you have had success with using EdTech, please let us know what it is.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher, or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
You are on Teacher Talk Radio on the Late Late Show with Eileen Wallace. Eileen, we've been talking about some of the benefits that you've encountered using EdTech in the classroom. And what I was interested in is whether you've been in touch or been in contact with other teachers who are either starting their EdTech journey or, you know, are quite experienced. What sort of feedback have you got from them to help you develop?
They have just been the nicest people in the world. A couple of years ago, my school was one of, you know, everybody, oh, every teacher needs a Twitter thing. You need to be tweeting about what your class is doing and all the rest of it. And so occasionally I was like, right, okay, here's a picture of them all working. God, that's interesting. And I was sending these things out and I thought, well, what's the actual audience for this? Why am I doing this? So I changed it around to turning it into me as a teacher, trying to reach out to other teachers. And people were so lovely. People would get in touch with you and go, have you tried this app? I know where you're coming from. I had that problem. Try this platform, see if it works for you. Or if I'd put something out saying, trying to make this work, I'm really struggling with it, I would get people messaging me going, do you want to jump on a call? We can talk it over. I can help you out. And suddenly this network starts spread. What I've now discovered is called a PLN. Learned that last week.
Right.
Or as my fellow EduGuardian calls it, a PLF, a personal learning family. I love that. I think we should change it to PLFs now. So I think for me, as a person who didn't use tech, all these people you saw on Twitter going, oh, have you done this? And you're like, oh my God, they know so much. I'm just like this little idiot sitting in a corner going, hello. But if you wave your hand and go, hello, they reach a hand back to you and say, come on up, we'll help you out. And they are such nice people. Loads of people I've got in contact with America now, that obviously their system works slightly differently. But it's been so nice to talk to people in another country who are having exactly the same issues as we are having here in the UK. And you go, it's not just me, you know, whether it's phone use like we were talking about at the beginning behavior or issues with home. Everybody is finding the same thing is happening. And all you have to do, you start making these connections and you go, okay, I'll follow you. And then suddenly you find out about a whole bunch of other people and they help you, help hints and tips. And the people have been so helpful and so nice that it's like having this extended faculty that, you know, there's not just me and the eight or nine people in my, I've got 800 or 900 people now that if I'm stuck or I need a hand, I can put a tweet out or a message and you'll get people coming back to me going, yep, yeah, here, try this. Let me send you these resources. Have you listened to this podcast? Have you signed up for this webinar? And there's things that I had never, I met you last year, this year a bit. I had no idea that there was education conferences. You know, I've been teaching for nearly 20 years now. I had no idea these things even existed.
We've just had Larissa Black text in saying, love having Eileen as part of the PLN, the PLF.
PLF.
You know? So do you know what? I had a question a moment ago and now it's disappeared. I was just thinking, you know, you've just said 800 or 900 people. Are these, are they all ed techie people or do you have a variety of contacts in?
I think I would say about 95% of them are ed tech and it's either teachers using it, or as I'm now starting to discover, there's something called instructional coaches. Had never heard of that before.
No.
Or it's the sort of the founders and the team behind the actual companies themselves.
Sure.
And they themselves are the most amazingly wonderful people that I have. I've had co-founders of companies message me and go, do you want to jump on a call for half an hour and I'll talk you through the platform? And you're like, no, get away with you. You started this company, right? But they will. They will get in touch with teachers and they'll give you half an hour of their time and to explain how it works and, you know, get back in touch if there's anything you're needing. And now I get it. It's their business. They want people using their platforms and all the rest of it. But if you don't want to use their platform, it's going to fail. And they have been so helpful at just giving their time, helping you out, occasionally giving you sneaky peeks at what's coming up next. I would say actually, Larissa messaging in there, I got excited last week. I hit 1,000 followers on my social media. Now that is genuinely been within about the last 6 months. And it's just people, you meet up with one person and you start chatting with them and then you go from them. It's like, what's that game when it's like you've got like five steps to get back to Kevin Bacon? It's kind of like that, you know, you find out about one person and they put you in touch with somebody else and they put you in touch with them. There's even, I do not know how this has happened. There's a young lad in America, he's 18, he's still in school and he's just started up his own platform that's like a whiteboard that the students use on their iPads. Now, there's lots of these out there. I mean, we use Microsoft Teams at work, and there is a whiteboard on there. But to this day, the class and I groan at each other and go, Miss, can we no use that, please? It's confusing. And I'm like, oh, thank God it's not just me. Even though my poor colleague Emily has explained it to me several times. But this young lad, Anthony's a platform, I got in touch with him the other week and he said, you want to have a look at it? Yes, please. It's so simple and straightforward. And I think it's because it's a young lad who's still in school. So he's using it. And he actually tweeted the other day there that a class he was in, his teacher was using it in class. And he's sitting up the back of the room going, oh my God, she's using my platform in the class that I'm sitting in. So he's getting, and how on earth would I have got in touch with, or, you know, find out about this thing from this wee laddie of 18 somewhere in the middle of America? There's no way I would have found out about that before. And it is the most amazing tool. And the only thing that upset me is I found out about it during the Easter holidays and I had to wait 2 weeks to get back to class to play with it.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's like young people are leading the charge, the sort of ed tech revolution that's happening in the classroom. And going back over your 20 years experience, have you found people's, you know, learners' behavior changing in the classroom? And is ed tech a solution, do you think, or a distraction?
What's your take on it? You're risking a full-blown rant there. Behavior has changed. Certainly, I think COVID has sped things up.
Sure.
But there has definitely been a distinct change. And like I said, it doesn't matter if you talk to educators in the UK or America. I think there was one lassie from, I want to say Ukraine, but I'm not sure, entirely sure. And we're all talking about seeing the same thing in the classroom.
Mm.
I don't think edtech is a panacea. Mm. Check me with the big words.
I know.
But it is part of it. There's one kid, I had her in my second year class just before Easter. She's known for going on safari. If she doesn't like a class, she'll just get up and walk out.
Right. I see what you mean.
You took it, right? So she would go and walk about, get her steps in for the day. It's the only plus side of it. And we were told to take it as a win. If she stays in the classroom, even if she's on her phone doing something else, if she stays in the classroom, take it as a win.
And as
she was staying with me longer and longer, she was staying in the class longer and longer. And one day I walked past her and she had her phone out, but she was on the platform we were using and she was joining in with the lesson.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to have a sit down now. She was joined in with the lesson. Okay, not for the whole 50 minutes, but for about 15, 20 minutes, she was joined in with the lesson. She was taking part. She was asking questions. And it was the ed tech that was helping her do that.
I suppose, I don't know. I mean, we're still at a cusp, if you like, where we're finding out, you know, there's people who are extroverts, introverts, people who are silently taking things in. And especially now, you know, I'm one of the silently taking things in for a lot of the time. And, you know, if I'm not engaged, if I'm not involved in what I'm trying to learn about or try to find out about, you know, I start to wonder, and the phone comes out and I look at it and I put it back in my pocket. And it's almost like I'm reassuring myself that nothing important's really happening. And it's interesting how, you know, when I started my EdTech journey, and this was, you know, going 10 years back, I was the teacher who wanted to ban YouTube. I said, you know, it's driving me nuts because, you know, I put students into an IT suite and I've set them the task. I've meticulously planned what I'm going to be covering. And one side has got their YouTube on and they've got their headphones plugged into the computers. And I say, you know, switch that off. And then I turn around to the other side and they've got their YouTube on, switch it off. And I finally contacted the head of IT and I said, you know, can you please just block YouTube, just block this, you know, it's not helping. And he said, why aren't you using it in the lesson? And that started my revolution, you know, of like, you know, I could be using EdTech in the class to stimulate discussion, collaboration, and so on. So do you find that EdTech is bringing people out of their shells and getting them involved in the classroom more as well?
I think so, yes. Particularly with more and more of the platforms that are either giving students game names or they can make them up, so they're not worried about, oh god, my answer is going to appear on the screen and it's going to have my name next to it. Oh no. So they get the confidence of they can take part without being named and shamed.
Yes.
And for some of them, actually, they can take part without being named and praised, because for some of the kids, praise is just as much of a killer as getting it wrong.
Sure.
So that's helped. And more of them that are giving AI to give feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's helping a lot because, again, if I go back to my S4 classes that are about to go on their exam leaves, I've got 30 kids in a room. I can't get everybody's questions, or I can't get into jotter, you know, in 50 minutes. And I was starting to wonder where kids were struggling, as we all do. There's always going to be some kids that slip through and you haven't had a chance to catch them. But by using EdTech platforms, I was able to see as they were typing in real time, oh, actually, she's got it. I hadn't realized that student had picked up as much of the lesson and they actually know a hell of a lot more about it than I thought they did. And because they've got this anonymity, they were much braver than, oh God, I've got to put my name in a bit of paper and hand it in. And, oh, I don't want to be seen, you know, I don't want to be seen handing it. Or if you get them to pass them round, that one kid that takes the pile of papers, then just passes it on without putting their sheet of paper in with it. I find a lot of really quiet kids engaging a lot more. One of my young lads, again, one of my students who's going to sit his exams this year in class, would not say boo to a goose. He's the loveliest young laddie. He'll smile and say hello when he comes in, but then he sits down and he'll just vanish. He's been using one of the chatbots that I've got set up that's running 24/7 for them to help them revise. And I can see when he's logging on. So he's been using it a lot, and you can even see what he's asking. So he's double checking things he already knows. I can see from the questions he's asking it. Can you give me a P chain on this? No, I need something on, and then it's a topic we've talked about. So he is genuinely using it as a revision tutor in a way that he simply would not have the confidence. I mean, he and I quite like each other. You know, he's a nice wee laddie. How was your weekend? Oh, that's good. But in class, zhumph, mouth shut. He would not come up to you and ask for help, but he's got this tutor that I've set up. I've said what they're going to talk about. They know I can see what they're asking it, so they know I've got eyes on it. And for him, it gives him the freedom that not Mrs. Wallace has set this up. She can see what I'm doing, but nobody else knows I'm doing this. So I can sit at home, I can do my homework and my revision with it, and he gets the confidence from it. So fingers crossed, I see the difference in his results come August. But yeah,
exactly, yeah.
It, for the quieter children, for the less confident, it's that little boost of, I can have a go at this and nobody knows if I get it wrong. Or I can have a go at this and if I get it right, nobody's going to point me out.
Yeah, we live in a strange culture, you know, on this island of ours where, you know, being seen to be clever is also not a good thing.
it's dreadful. Honestly, I don't know if it's worse up here than in England, but it's absolutely frowned on that you have the audacity to say I'm quite good at that, unless you play football, and then they never shut up. But you know, there's a real I mustn't say I'm very good at anything, and particularly the girls. The girls I find really don't want to be seen to be good at something academic.
Yeah.
But by doing it via their device, you start seeing, actually, you do know a lot more about this. Or they get braver with their interpretations, or they get braver with their answers, and it gives them the confidence to do it without having to put your hand up, or, God forbid, the teacher picks you, or you have to go out to the board or something. It's not a solve. It's not going to be right for all kids.
No.
Hand on heart, they're not going to be right for all kids, but... If it gives them that first step, it's like me and my EdTech journey all the way back there in March last year. I tried one thing and went, I could maybe do this. And now I'm sitting here after some technical issues having a chat to you. And in May, I'm presenting a conference.
Wow.
You know, it's these little steps. In my way, if that's what it's doing for me, how can I help this, do this for my students?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair question. And I mean, your enthusiasm and passion are obviously coming through here in spades, in buckets. And
one of my favourite lines, one of my little kids was leaving at an S2 kid and he stopped and he looked at me and went, Miss, you're more Gen Z than Gen Z. At the time I wasn't quite sure what he meant, and afterwards I was like, I think that one's a compliment.
they're very subtle with their compliments,
aren't they?
but what gives you your passion and enthusiasm, you know, after 20 years of teaching? Where did you get it from?
My family's always been lifelong learners.
Okay.
My dad was community education officer, and then he was in charge of ComEd up in the Highlands and Islands. So he was always about learning new things. My mum set up her own business when she was in her 40s and was a very successful business for 20 years. You know, I started out as a dance teacher. And then had to have a change of career, and went, you know, I left school with one hire going, I don't need school, I know what I'm doing. And then my mid-20s had to go, okay, we need to do something new now. So I've always been about learning new things. And I think sort of 2015 onwards, things were getting stale for me and there wasn't anything moving forward, and I wasn't making progress with my classes. And then we came back after COVID and you looked at these classes in front of you and went, oh my God, what am I doing here? Can I even remember how to teach? How do I teach? And this has just given me a kick up the backside that I needed to go, no, there's still stuff out there to learn. There's always new stuff out there to learn. You've just got to find what floats your boat. And I did not think it was going to be this. My husband's, he's the cybersecurity kind of side of things. He's been computing his entire life. And he thinks this is hilarious because I'm now jumping up and down about AI and he's sitting in the corner grumbling about it. We've got this complete flick over of technology in our household. I honestly don't know if I could put my finger on it. I just know, and this is going to sound like it's come off a Hallmark card, it just flicks the joy button inside of me. And I just go into my classroom going, there's a new generator out, we're going to try a new game, or there's a new, and come on, we're going to try this, it's something new. It might not work. At school today, the school bell wasn't working, the server was down, the Wi-Fi, it was the first day back, and it didn't, tomorrow will be better though. Tomorrow will be something different.
And I think, you know, I was mentioning at the start, I had a mystery in my mind, which is how do we, what could we say to the folded arm brigade, you know, the people who don't want to embrace ed tech, don't want to go forward. And you've given me so many golden nuggets, you know, it works with the students, it gives learners a voice, especially those who don't want to vocalize what they know. It's given you a passion, you know, it's helped fuel your passion for learning. And I'm asking the audience as well, you know, if anybody wants to text in or, you know, call in and say, you know, what is it that makes EdTech work for you?
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
The BBC reported on a long-term study by the Institute of Fiscal Studies, which found children living near Sure Start centres did better at GCSE. The research says these living near a centre performed up to 3 grades better than those living further away. Sure Start began in 1998 to support new parents, especially in disadvantaged areas, but due to austerity, many have since closed. The Department for Education said its Family Hub scheme had a number of advantages over the Sure Start model. The IFS study used postcodes from when children were age 5 to determine proximity to centres and looked at the GCSE results of those children 11 years later. It found what it describes as big improvements in performance in those living near a centre, especially those from low-income backgrounds. Former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, Labour Chancellor at the time the initiative was launched, said the UK now needs a new Sure Start, and described the results as what most parents already know, that a supportive environment in early years was life-transforming. Among all children in the study, those who live near a Sure Start centre performed better than those who lived far away, but the trend was most pronounced amongst those eligible for free school meals and those from minority ethnic backgrounds. According to The Guardian, schools in England could lose up to £1 billion in funding by 2030, with exceptional falls in pupil numbers prompting closures. Mergers and school closures are already happening in parts of London, where pupil numbers have been falling for some time. According to the think tank Education Policy Institute, the North East is projected to see the greatest decline in primary pupil numbers, down by 13% by 2028 to 29. At secondary school level, Yorkshire and Humber, the North East and London are projected to have the largest falls in pupil numbers, although other areas, including the West Midlands and the South East, have rising numbers. Pupil numbers had grown because of a fertility surge in the 2000s, but as that cohort has moved through, numbers are now falling. Even with increases in per pupil funding, the EPI predicts schools will find it hard to balance budgets as fewer pupils do not lead to reduced costs. The decline is due mainly to a falling birth rate and changing migration patterns. Full details of the EPI projections can be found on the Guardian website. Schools Week reports on the decision by Ofsted to appoint a former Chief Inspector, Dame Christine Gilbert, to lead the independent inquiry into its response to the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine served as the HMCI from 2006 to 2011 and now chairs the Education Endowment Foundation. The Learning Review follows a coroner's ruling in December that an Ofsted inspection contributed to the death of Mrs. Perry, then head teacher of Caversham Primary School. The review will consider actions Ofsted took in response to hearing about the death of Ruth Perry. Dame Christine will have access to relevant records, Ofsted staff, and the opportunity to meet with Ruth Perry's family as part of the review. The review will not examine the November 2022 inspection of Caversham Primary. Teaching unions have expressed concern about the appointment of Gilbert, saying it was critical that the review was robust, independent and impartial, and that some would, rightly, question the notion of a former HMCI reviewing the work of Ofsted. A report will be completed after the review and recommendations will focus on future actions. Schools Week also reports on a plan for the Department for Education to work with the Scout Association to provide 40,000 explorers, those aged 14 to 18, with the skills and knowledge they need to consider a career in teaching. The DfE will work with the Scouts to create age-appropriate activities that inspire young people to consider a career in teaching, linking to relevant badges and awards. It did, however, clarify that there are currently no plans for a teaching badge. The policy is part of the DfE's Get Into Teaching plan, which aims to elevate the status of the profession and target new audiences who have not yet considered teaching as a career. The scheme will launch in September and it is hoped that it will reach 40,000 young people. The Scouts will create support and guidance material for those running the programme. The initial one-year contract is worth £43,000 but can be extended subject to budget availability. Finally, a teenager who campaigned for skateboarding to be included in school qualifications is proud to see it added to the list of approved GCSE sports in Wales. According to the report on the BBC News website, Qualifications Wales has added 13 new sports to the approved list for GCSE PE. Other newly allowed sports include BMX, shooting, kickboxing and wakeboarding. The new Made for Wales GCSE in Physical Education and Health will be available for first teaching from September 2026. The change makes Wales the second UK nation to include skateboarding, behind Northern Ireland. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Joe Fox.
And we're back with Eileen Wallace talking about EdTech implementation in the classroom. Eileen, I was just, you know, there was something you were telling me about a young man in America who designed a platform that could be used with, you know, within the classroom. What do you think will be the future of ed tech, you know, particularly in use in the classroom? What do you think? What do you, how do you imagine it to sort of pan out?
Oh my God. I mean, it's changing so fast at the moment that the platforms that have been around for a year are beyond anything you'd have thought capable of them doing a year ago. And there seems to be a new one out every week. Mm. I think though it's just going to become another accepted part of teaching. Eventually, as all new technological advent, you know, everything will get launched at the beginning and everybody will have the best idea, and then suddenly we'll realize there's 25 platforms doing exactly the same thing, and which you're starting to see at the minute. And the good ones will stay and the others will drop away. I mean, it's the same with everything. But I think we will get to a point where there will be some platforms that people can rely on and the value is there, and they will just become an inbuilt part of teaching and of education. Because let's be honest, they're a part of our lives now.
Sure.
I mean, how many websites do you go on and you go, oh, I need to ask somebody, and you hit that chat button and it's an AI chatbot you're talking to. You know, it's not a person sitting there. You might eventually get passed on to a person. So the AI and the kind of tech that we are looking at using in the classroom is already being used in our normal lives. And it's just going to get bigger and bigger until we don't even bat an eyelid at it anymore. It's just going to be a part of our life. And students will be, well, why am I not using that in the classroom? You know, I think we've got a couple of years ahead of us of the tech being years ahead of educational bodies. I was sitting and listening to a webinar a couple of weeks ago that I think it was the University of Edinburgh were doing with, I can't remember the trust's name. And they had apparently reached out to the Scottish Government and those kind of bodies to say, what's your AI policy? And apparently Education Scotland had said AI's got nothing to do with them. They're not going to be creating a policy. and you thought, am I actually hearing this?
Yeah.
You know, you are Education Scotland. This is... So I think we're going to have a bumpy couple of years where people in the classrooms are going to be miles ahead of even their senior managers, and certainly ahead of their governments. Because from what I'm seeing, and this is what's getting me, is I'm deciding my professional development. I'm not sitting going, oh God, it's in service day. I'm going to have to listen to this guy for 2 hours. And then I might actually get a chance to go to my classroom to get ready for tomorrow.
Sure.
Teachers are going on and finding people on social media and learning what they want to learn at the speed they want to learn it, and then are practicing in their classrooms. So nobody actually at the moment knows what's spreading, because teachers are spreading it amongst themselves.
Yes.
And a lot of the talk from higher up seems to be, we need to have policy on AI ethics and AI privacy and AI and the rights of the child, which is, we do. That bit has to be done. But you also have to catch up with the tech that teachers are using in the classroom. I mean, the kids are already using AI Snapchat and that kind of thing, but they're also actually remarkably ignorant of what's out there.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to say, I've found sort of like the opposite, because I teach 16-year-olds, and a lot of learners are actually using apps that I've never even seen, you know, and I think it was called My AI and My Chat and things like that, and while I'm explaining things in the class, they are busy tapping in my explanation into their phones to get another explanation in their own language, for example, or in a simplified version, or, you know, things like this. So, you know, I think you're right. You know, in a sense, the classroom is ahead of government policy at the moment. Government policy is about 3 years behind industrial standards.
Oh, God, yes. You know,
what the industry is capable of. And nobody really understands what in heaven is going on.
There's no connection. There's no joining up. Nobody's coming into a classroom and going, show me what you're doing. Or at least, from my experience, there's possibly people out there that are having a better connection with government. I'm trying to get, there's a guy I know at Education Scotland that I'm basically trying to get him by the neck and go, come in and see what we're doing. Don't, no, yeah, ChatGPT is behind a lot of that, but none of us are actually using that in class because there's privacy issues, there's problems. This is what we're using now. So forget worrying about that. This is what we've moved on to now. I don't know how we join that up. That one's above my pay grade at the moment.
I think it's going to be, I imagine a sort of like a Wild West approach at the moment. You know, everybody is just running out there trying to grab as much turf as they can because there's money to be made.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, if we don't get the ethics in, young people who are developing those skills at the moment are going to go into the Wild West without any sort of ethical or moral concern.
Yeah.
How's that?
No, it's true. The computing studies teacher and myself at school have been working together to put a unit on AI for our little first and second years. So she's doing the LLM side of it, the technological side of it, and I've been looking at the bias and privacy and ethics side of it. And it's getting them to think about that before they just go running off madly using it. I had a wonderful discussion with a class of fourth years, and I was showing them a text-to-image generator. They were doing it through my account. They were giving me the prompts, and I was putting it in for them. And I knew they were doing art standard grades, showing my age there, art national fives. So we were having a discussion about, you know, people's artwork being used, being scraped off the internet by and what was this art they were creating, you know? And one of the boys came out with, well, genuinely my jaw hit the floor. He's like, well, where does the creative process start, miss? It starts when you think up the idea. Does it matter if you use a paintbrush or tech? And I was like, okay. So, you know, this went on, but once we'd had the discussion about use of other people's materials and copyright and, you know, use of images, I'm quite sure we do, the school has a Mentors for Violence Prevention program, a very good guidance system that I'm sure when it comes to it, they'll be looking at the likes of the deep problem with deep fakes with students. But like you were saying, if we don't start building this in, so they automatically consider, oh, where is that? You know, where's that information come from? What's the twist on it? Why is it truthful or not? I mean, get it this way. There's a platform that, you know, I use all the time that now has a generator built in where the students have got to guess, is it AI generated or human generated?
Wow.
Now, the discussions that you can have around the use of ed tech and AI with little first and second years, I'm sure I've seen something on social media with a teacher in America using it with like little tutti primary school kids. This is what they're going out into the world in. Holly Clark, in her book, she talks about the students that we're teaching now, by the time they're out working, we have no idea what their working world is going to look like. Apart from, it's going to be different to ours.
I mean, I've just saw a piece of news a couple of days back that one of the platforms is buying people's videos for $7.50 a minute.
Oof.
And, you know, obviously everybody's going to be interested in that and saying, I didn't sort of look into it in great detail, but it's made me think that, you know, with our current climate of people producing, video content, they'll be happy to sell for $7.50, a minute, you know, if that's, but I mean, I suppose it's more artistic. And again, it's going to be artistic videos and so on. I don't know. Who knows what the future is going to be?
We're in the wrong job.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But I would say that the young people today really do have, I'd like to think they'd have a glorious future on their hands, something that's exciting, something that's going to be innovative, something that we can't even imagine at the moment. We're trying to contain it, but the genie's out the bottle. And no, it's going to be something marvellous, I think.
I think so. I mean, I had a discussion with a teacher the other week there, and what I think we can't do is repeat what we did with social media. When social media came out, everybody went, oh, kids know how to use phones. They'll be fine. We don't need to talk to them about it. And now we're in a situation where we're all going, oh, God, get them off social media, get them off social media. I think we need to talk to kids about AI. We need to talk to them about ed tech. We need to talk to them about how this works so they're comfortable and use it responsibly. We're never going to reach 100% of them. But that's the same as to whether you're using a textbook or a PowerPoint. But I think if we, it has got to become built into lessons. And I know it's scary. I mean, I know a colleague at work who still doesn't even use PowerPoints.
Good Lord.
But to be honest, at the state we're at, you can go straight from not using them to talking to something and it'll create your lessons for you. So I think we're, like you said, we're at this tipping point. But if we run away scared from it, we're going to lose out on some of the most productive and creative tools we've ever had as teachers.
I mean, I've always thought of, you know, large language models as sort of like engines in that we can use to produce vehicles of any type. And we're limited only by our imagination as to what vehicle we can produce. And if you think about it, back in the, you know, back in the days when vehicles were first introduced, you know, we had a man walking with a red flag in front of him. Control, you know, warning everybody, warning, danger, danger, you know, and, you know, and then they, you know, they built highways and said, you know, yeah, go at any speed you want. It's not a problem.
And now the cars are driving themselves.
And now the cars are driving themselves. So where do we go? Where? I honestly think, though, that it's going to be young people who take the lead. And you're right. We need to safeguard them. We need to show them how to do things in a responsible manner and in a sensible manner so that they don't, you know, end up hurting themselves.
Yes, definitely.
Eileen, it's been a wonderful conversation. And you've given me a lot of food for thought, and I'm just trying to think, you know, how do we unfold the arms? Well, you know, show them the excitement that that can be generated in the classroom, you know, and as you were saying, you know, this passion for learning, learning new things that you've encountered as well. And it's a world out there that's ready to be explored by the brave and adventurous. Thank you so much for coming to my late, late show. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I have had an absolute ball. Thank you for making me take a big, brave step, Toby.
Not at all. And I hope to see you at Bet 25.
Bet 25, you're on.
All right. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.